Arlene, what is one outstanding character trait of a happy wife?
When you think of a happy wife, you know, I always think of that she's smiling, that she is enjoying her life as a wife. She's not complaining. And when she thinks of her marriage, she thinks this is a good thing and not like, how did I get myself into this mess?
Well, you're smiling. I'm assuming that you're feeling like you're a pretty happy wife.
I'm a pretty happy wife.
And that is Arlene Pellicane on today's Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. We'll talk about how you can grab onto that concept of happiness as a married woman, and there's going to be a lot of practical things along the way here.
And John, it's going to be fun too. Arlene, you are terrific at bringing humor, which helps people kind of open their hearts to the possibility of I could do it differently.
Being married is funny.
Yes. It really is. And, you know, here at Focus on the Family, we want to help you build a relationship with your spouse that is enduring and joyful.
Yeah.
And that's the goal of today's program. And I am thrilled to welcome Arlene back to the broadcast.
It's so wonderful to be here with you.
Well, Arlene has been here before. She's the author of a number of books, and you can hear that sweet spirit come out, and I think that's one reason, Jim, she has really resonated with our audience. The book we're talking about today is called 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife, and she and her husband, James, have three children.
And they are adorable kids, let me tell you.
They're fun.
Arlene, you were here about 31 days ago.
Yeah. And, we've got our numbers down really well.
We got it down. And we were talking at that point about 31 days to a happy husband. We talked about the difference between happiness and joy. Yep. Let me set that up again to the sensitive Christian listener who is saying, hey, it's not about being happy.
Yeah.
Clarify that
for us.
It's
that whole idea from the Psalms, in your presence is fullness of joy. And if you as a wife are in God's presence, there's going to be joy there. So don't get caught up, you know, like, oh, we're not supposed to, it's not all about us and about happiness. Don't get caught up with that. It's the idea that your marriage should emanate joy.
And in fact, you use HAPPY because it's an acronym.
Yes, it's easier. I get more in, H-A-P-P-Y.
Just quickly tell us, what does the HAPPY stand for?
That's right. So if a wife can be more H, hopeful, placing her hope in God, not her marriage or her circumstance, if she can be A, adaptable, that when circumstances don't go her way, she doesn't freak out. The P is purposeful, that she is purposeful as a wife. She has goals. And the other P is positive. This doesn't mean she has to bounce around like Tigger all the time. It just means that she has a grateful attitude. And the Y is everyone's favorite. It's yielded, being yielded, soft towards God, soft towards her husband.
That's everyone's
favorite.
That's funny. Let me ask you, and we're going to talk about different aspects of that acronym HAPPY over the course of the next half hour, but was there ever a time when you weren't a happy wife? It's hard to see you and your smile and to think that you don't have something in your DNA that makes you
joyful. You know, I have to admit, so we've been married 16 years, and like all women, we start happy when we get married. And I have to say, I have been married happily. I have been a happy woman. But this is, I think, the beauty of a book like this, or any book about marriage to help you, is you can always learn more.
Let me ask you this. Is there a difference in this way between happiness and joy? Yeah. Are they both choices that we make?
I really think that this is a choice.
So both happiness and joy.
They're both happiness and joy, that these are things that we would... It's a kind of a hard question, you know, so...
I think we think of it transactionally. Mm-hmm. Like if we do these things and God gives us joy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what he means. He's meaning in my presence and doing the things that I've asked you to do will bring you joy.
Yes.
And that joy is really the gift.
And I think that joy, it's like something that the Lord gives you, where perhaps that happiness is more of a, okay, this didn't go my way, but I'm going to choose to be happy about it. Mm. And that the joy is something that the Holy Spirit gives you. Mm. So there is definitely that element to it. And so I think that we want, of course, more of the Holy Spirit in our lives as a wife so we can have that joy, and that there are those times where we have to choose, I will choose happiness, I will choose to smile through this.
I think that's where a big benefit of a book like this comes, Jim, because there are many people who, they listen to Christian radio, they do the right things, they go to church, they hear sermons, but there's something about just having a purposeful day-by-day reminder that I can really choose something differently. I don't have to react this way to the circumstances or to our relationship.
No, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, a comical way of saying it, some people have said to me as we're dealing with very heavy cultural issues, they'll say, you Christians, you must be saved except for your faces.
Right.
Because they don't look very happy.
Yes.
And that's a real indictment against the spirit of God in us, isn't it?
You know, and you think of marriage, and then why would I want to be married? You know, they all look so unhappy. And so we're all working very hard to turn that around to say, look at those married people. They are very happy.
Well,
they have
and that's
joy
what,
in that.
I appreciate the challenge of that. And let's talk about that for a minute, because when it's fashionable to be negative, our culture just likes being critical.
Yeah.
And we see it on television. We base our humor in it. But when it comes to Christian marriage particularly, we got to guard against that, don't we?
That's right. You know, and most days are filled with irritations,
yes,
you know,
they
as a wife. The irritations, they come. And so it's this idea that I can find hope not in my circumstances, not in my address, but I'm going to find my hope in God. I remember one day, it's just a normal day that all of us wives go through. Post office line is long. Kids won't nap. Dinner's taking too long. Things are irritating. And my husband, who was learning how to play the guitar at that time, which
that's
was not
busy...
adding to the
Yeah, that's a busy
serenity.
Household.
He was singing a praise song that is great as our God. Of course, it didn't quite sound like the way that you hear it on the radio, maybe, but he was singing this, but I started singing along, not really consciously thinking anything, but just singing along. And within a minute, you know, it's like my attitude was different. Mm-hmm. My countenance was different simply because I was now not focusing on my problems, on my irritations, on my chicken, but I was saying, God, you are great. And you're greatly to be praised. And if we can put our hope in God, praise him more during our day, it will make us happier as wives.
I don't struggle putting my hope in my chicken.
Yeah.
But let me, and I think you've answered it, but let's put a punctuation point there. Where does a woman, a wife, where does she start to find that hope and that joy?
Yeah,
what's the starting place? Let's say, saying it differently, can I get into a pattern of negativity?
Yes.
And how do I break out of the pattern?
Yeah. And you know, it is as simple as falling to your knees and saying, God, I am in this pattern where I always think these bad thoughts. I always go to the dark side of the moon. Will you help me? And it's this idea that you cannot do it on your own. You know, you can't just think yourself out of something, but you can ask God, God, by your Holy Spirit, will you transform me? And then you can stop yourself. You know, when you start thinking those negative thoughts, after that negative thought is out, then think of two things you're grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
So you've complained because the post office line was long. Okay, turn it around in your mind like a game. Well, at least I have a post office to go to. At least my mail will go untampered to its destination. So you just kind of play with, you know, usually spin is kind of seen as something negative. But in this case, it can be very positive that you take all these negative things that you normally think of and you try to spin them into something positive, something you're grateful for.
Arlene, one of the biggest things we hear here at Focus on the Family is the pace of life is killing my marriage.
Right.
I mean, he's busy. I'm busy. We got the kids. They're keeping us busy. There's no margin for us.
Yeah.
How does the wife who wants to be happy and wants to create that right environment, how does she find margin?
It is the word, isn't it? Margin. And, you know, I quote Richard Swenson, who wrote the book Margin and who you've had here in the book. And it is about creating, saying no to things, because one of the joys of being a wife that I talk about is being able to be adaptable, to go with the flow, be more easygoing. But it's really hard to be adaptable when you've got to get to soccer practice in 10 minutes, and then you've got to get dinner within the next half hour, and then you've got to be at youth group at 7, and you've got to get everyone to bed. So it's like, what do we do? So some of it is just taking a look at your schedule and saying, is there anything that we can take out? And maybe it's just one thing, because a lot of times we have a lot of worthwhile things that we're doing. But if there's maybe just one thing, one activity, you know, my daughter wants to be in an ensemble at school, and that is a good request. But as we looked at our schedule, it was like, we can't do that this year. So yes, that was disappointing. But for the family life, you have to see, is there something I can take out so I can have more margin? So, you know, a lot of times we'll say, oh, sure, I can do that Tuesday night, because you see your Tuesday night is free. But instead to realize, you know what, that's the only night this week we're not doing anything. So no, we can't do that. So to have build in more margin so you can be more adaptable and easygoing with all the changes that will happen in your schedule.
Let me ask this question, because I'm thinking of Jean, my wife Jean. She's a biochemist, scientist. So adaptability for her could be translated into lowering standards.
Yes.
You know, and I just want to appeal to that woman who thinks that way, very black and white. When I hear you talk about adaptability, it feels like I need to not hit the standard I'd like us to hit as a family.
Yeah. Well, for that, in that sense, maybe you can say, well, 80% will go and we'll have a little 20% that we can kind of tinker with so that you are still achieving. Because it's true. You want to aim for excellence. You want to do these things. But in your marriage, let's take it back to the husband and wife of being adaptable to each other. In the marriage, just being able to say, hey, if we have something that goes wrong between us, that we're adaptable enough and we have time enough that we can fix this, that we're not so strapped that we're not able to communicate with each other. Mm. And the other sense of adaptability is that whole idea of flexing with one another. And I remember when James and I were first married, you know, the starry-eyed newlyweds, he wanted to go on a camping trip. That was the last thing on earth I wanted to do. But we were new to the city. It was a way to get to know people from the local church. And he said, let's do it. So we're on our way. And you know how we as wives will say, okay, we'll do it. But the whole time we are making you miserable.
And right. We know you really don't want.
Yeah. So usually I'm happy talking the whole 2-hour ride. I was quiet, irritable. And he stops right outside of the campsite and he says to me, are you going to be like this all weekend? Because if you are, we can go home right now because I'm here to have fun. And I was like, oh no. And then I said to him, you mean I didn't have to come? But of course, this was not the point. And it was the idea of, I have to be adaptable to this man and to the things that mean something to him. And even if it doesn't mean something to me and it's uncomfortable to me, that I will adapt. And I can't say it was an A+ weekend. It's probably like a C+, but we made it and I camped and I'm learning to adapt. And, you know, he's learning to go camping and like go in a cabin. And then I'm learning to go camping and once in a while go in a tent, you know, these kinds of things. And it's this idea of being flexible and I will adapt to you.
Well, and another way to say that, you're describing it this way for me, my ears are hearing in a kind of a biblical context, it's about selflessness.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, so often, John, we're talking about that here more and more. And in our culture, as modern contemporary people, we are steeped in self-centeredness and we don't even really see it.
Yeah.
We think we're living a great Christian walk, but it seeps in and
it
grabs
us. In our attitude, we'll say, we'll do this for you, but we'll make sure you know it's a sacrifice for us, you know, like we have this attitude.
Right.
Instead of saying, you know what, this is not a big deal. And it is hard. And it's something we have to talk ourselves through and pray ourselves through to say, let me be more of a selfless wife. Mm. And in doing that, you know, you're afraid, oh, I'll lose myself. But in doing that, I mean, God is so paradoxical. In doing that, you will find yourself, you'll find your significance as a wife when you're okay to be selfless.
Mm. Arlene, one of the things you addressed in the book, and that we can't cover all the hot button topics, but you talked about finances, and there are, Jim, we hear from so many people, that's such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Dina and I are having kind of an ongoing discussion about where we're at financially and what's happening right now. And how do you adapt if you're not at all alike financially?
Yes.
I mean, that's a pretty tough spot. How does a woman respond to that?
I think it is understanding where each other are coming from and trying to understand, okay, this is where my husband's coming from. This is where I'm coming from. You know, my husband and I, we're lucky because we're both savers. So we both are frugal. In fact, I have like a top 10 frugal list. You know, we tear the Kleenex in half because you can get two. I do that because you can get
you really
two
do
uses.
That?
I really do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I can get two uses out of that thing. I know, it's terrible, isn't it?
And you wrote the happy book?
Can you believe it? There I am with my little shred of Kleenex.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, like you pat something and you got all this stuff that's left over.
That's true.
So you know what? So as a husband and wife, you come with these different quirks and idiosyncrasies. Someone's a saver and someone's a spender. And I think being able to understand where are we coming from, talking about that, finding some middle ground. It's like any issue of marriage, finding this middle ground that you both can live with and leaning into each other's strengths to realize.
You've talked to enough women, though, that middle ground doesn't exist for a lot of couples, it seems.
Well, it doesn't exist in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's less and less
you're right.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
There is no middle ground.
It's
middle ground is sacrifice, and I don't like sacrifice.
Yeah.
Isn't that really the issue?
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, Arlene, but I'm going to put a little bit of pressure on you with this one.
Okay.
In your book, you talk about your 40th birthday party.
That's already pressure, right?
Whoops.
Yeah.
You just
did I say
about
that?
Age.
But it had to be very recent.
Oh, super recent.
Yeah, it is. And but you had a little issue,
you know,
there
when
with
a
James.
Woman, when a wife has a birthday, that is the signal for everyone, especially her husband, to be extremely nice on the birthday and really the week preceding also, and maybe even the month these days. But you know what? It was leading up to my birthday, and you think, wow, everyone should be so nice to me. I wasn't feeling well. James and I at that time were going to the gym every other day, and he kicks me. It's your time to go to the gym. And I was like, I don't feel good. I'm not going to the gym. He's like, yes, you are. It's your turn. You're not sick enough. And so we went through that, and then we went to the breakfast table, and he was like, aren't you going to clean it up? And I said, we're going to eat cereal. Why should I clean it up? You know, it's just getting more crumbs. And then he said, well, why should we clean it up anytime then? Because you're always getting ready to eat the next meal. And this is how the day went. So we just, you know, we were driving together. I was driving. And you know how that goes. So he gave me advice about driving.
This is your birthday?
This is not my birthday. It is like maybe a day or two before.
Okay. Woo.
And I am just thinking like, what in the world? And we leave that time of just going back and forth with each other. And this is life, right? Mm-hmm. That you have these irritations. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, okay, I'm writing this book, 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife. How do I recalibrate and become happier in this moment? And one of the P's is positive. And it's this idea of how can I frame this in a positive light? And it doesn't mean you have to sweep everything under the rug. Later that day, I said to James, you know, honey, this was a little rough. You criticized my driving. And then we talked about cleaning the table. And then you kicked me out of bed. You know, I need you to be a little nicer to me when I'm not feeling well. And he teased and said, you know, oh, I'm so good at picking on you and, you know, that kind of thing. But then he said, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say anything to bother you. And, you know, that's that adaptability with each other, giving each other sway, thinking the best of the other person instead of thinking that they're trying to sabotage your life. And then really trying to be honest with each other, but put that positive spin of, you know what, these days come. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And tomorrow will be a better day.
Well, and I like that idea of forgiveness in the middle of that. That's something you mentioned as well. You got to forgive on the little things.
And because you want him to forgive you on the little things. And so you've got to do the same to him.
Arlene, in your book, you talk about a career plan and how it relates to being, I guess, a joyful, happy wife.
Yeah.
How does a career, that doesn't sound happy to me.
It doesn't sound happy to you. Yeah. It's the whole idea of the P of being purposeful, because what you are invested in, you like, you're into. But a lot of times if I ask someone, you know, do you have a goal about home decorating or your children, your parenting, are you going to go back to school? They may have goals like that. But if I say, do you have a goal in your marriage? They'll look at me blankly like, to stay married, you know, is there anything else? And so this whole idea that you will come to the marriage and there's purpose there. It's not just this endless stream of mundane days.
What does that do
for you? But there's purpose.
What does it do for you to have a purpose?
It gives you something to shoot for.
You're aiming for
something. There's some momentum there. There's growth there. And that's a lot more fun than every day is the same boring day of marriage. You know, I interviewed a lot of ladies for this book, Liz Curtis Higgs, Carol Kent, and Dr. Marjorie Blanchard, who is the wife of Ken Blanchard. They're both these amazing business entrepreneurs. And she talked about how it's so important to stay interesting to one another. And so you have things to talk about. You have books that you've read, ideas that you have, you know, movies that you've watched that you want to talk about. And then she asked this question, which I think is really good to ask yourself. What's new on your marriage resume in the last 3 years? Huh. What have you done? Are you saving up for a cruise or maybe a staycation for the weekend? Are you going to a restaurant maybe that is out of the rut of where you always go every Friday night? Are you reading a book together? It could be a finance book, as we talked about finances earlier. So what's new on your marriage resume in the last 3 years?
Well, and you mentioned activities in that regard.
Yeah.
Activity seems not to be the problem for Gene and me. I mean, we've got so much activity. I mean, our resume is plumb full.
That's good.
But I would think also in that resume concept, it's nice to put characteristics in there, wouldn't it be?
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you said, as a couple, we are going to be more, and pick one, don't overwhelm yourself, you know, with 10 things, but we are going to be more considerate this year.
Toward each other. Yeah.
And you say that's going to be a resume
goal that
a year from now, we will have been more considerate to one another.
Well, and you know, I'm thinking about this because we do this with our boys. We try to pick a theme a year to concentrate on, whether it's honesty or treating others the way you want to be treated. But to have a theme and then build that into our dialogue regularly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're saying with
really
marriage,
neat.
That kind of thing.
And it brings life to it.
Yeah, as a married couple, have a theme for the year or for the month or however often you want to do it to build in a godly characteristic into your marriage. I like that. That is really, I think, a good idea. Arlene, let's talk about the worst word in the English lexicon today. submission.
Submission. Bum, 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 bum.
I mean, if there's anybody from the New York Times listening right now, we have created the faux pas of the 21st century. Set into some context what submission is in a Christian way. What do we mean by it?
You know, I love what one of my friends said. Submission is ducking low enough so that God can deck your husband.
Okay. That is really funny.
I'm going to make sure Dina doesn't hear that part. Yeah.
Let's bleep that part. No, I'm kidding. That's really good.
So it's this idea, you know, you think, oh, if I submit to him, all these terrible things will happen to me. But it's this idea of there is order. The word I use is yield because it worked with happy, but the Y is yielding. And, you know, when you are coming onto a freeway, an interstate, you yield to that other car, not because your car is better, not because their car is better, but because there's order. And it's this idea that there is a biblical order, whether you like it or not, of the man being the head of the home. And so this is nothing new for a woman to say, you know, Eve wanted to rule over her husband and she couldn't. This is nothing new. And for us to realize that there's an order here, my husband's the head of the home. And if I will bring myself under that protection of respecting him, of listening to him, it does allow God to get your husband. God's much better at getting your husband's attention if there's, let's say, something wrong happening that you feel like you have to right. God's much better at that than we are. So if we will simply, and I'm not talking about anything abusive or anything like that, but if we will say, I will yield to my husband and I will believe in faith that God will bless me for it. I'll give you a really small example. We live in San Diego, so obviously it's pretty sunny there. And my daughter, who's in third grade, really wanted to get boots because all the little girls in school were wearing boots. So we were at the store. And I said to James, oh, honey, can we get these boots for Noelle? And she's just like, you know, has these bright eyes, like, please, can we get these boots? And he said, no, why do we need boots in San Diego? Yeah. And her face just fell. And I said, I have a choice here. I can say, oh, let me use my mad money. Talk about money again. Let me use my mad money. Honey, I'll buy her the boots. Or, oh, honey, please, can we buy the boots? But this thought of James is the head of our house. And what do I want to teach my children? I want to teach them that I respect what he says. So I said to Noelle, I'm sorry, we're not getting the boots today. And her little face fell. Well, what happened 2 weeks later? We got a bunch of stuff from my cousin. And what was in the bag of clothes and such? Boots. And they were much nicer than what I would have bought. Her.
And you didn't call her and ask her to buy her.
And I didn't have to. You know, that was God's gift of his delivery. And it was that little message to me saying, if you will honor your husband, if you will yield to him, if you will submit to him, I will take care of you. Now, on a side note, James later on had said, you know, not only do we not need, let's say, the boots, you know, he's a realtor. And he said, you know, at that time that you asked me, I didn't have any closings in the pipe. You know, there wasn't anything happening. And I thought, why am I spending money on boots? And, you know, sometimes we as women, we think we know the whole story about something, but we don't. There's another reason that your husband is saying something, and to be able to trust that what he's saying is true and honor him in that way.
Well, let's put the boot on the other foot, though.
Yes.
And what I mean by that's that good. Is... Jean and I, our parenting styles can be a little different at times, and she will say to me, you're far too accommodating,
yes,
too, you know, lax.
Yeah.
And so I'll be the one to say, okay, let's buy the boots,
right.
And she'll be the one feeling like she has to say no. Talk about it in that context.
That's a funny thing, because that's her submitting to you,
right.
Being lax. It's
right.
Like the opposite.
Right.
So it's her having to say, okay, we will do this because Jim wants us to do this. And then maybe later having a private conversation with you saying, we need to talk about our budget. Like, how are we doing this?
Yeah.
But to still honor you while you're buying stuff for the kids that she may not agree with, that she has to kind of hold her tongue. I'm so sorry, Jean, that I'm saying this.
And I will never repeat this to
yes,
her.
Exactly.
Well, Arlene Pelicane, you have done a fantastic job bringing great thoughts to us, all of us, not just wives, about becoming a happy wife, but also husbands, how to create an environment that helps your spouse,
yes,
become a happy wife. Thanks for being with us.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, our time has gone by so quickly as we've covered just a portion of Arlene's book, 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller.
Ideally, marriage should emanate joy, as Arlene Pelicane so rightly mentioned on today's broadcast. But there is a need to be intentional. I hope that this message today has encouraged you and that you will turn your focus towards God and become purposeful in your marriage. Our resource offering today is a book by Erin Smalley, along with her husband Greg and his father Gary, called The Wholehearted Wife. Recognizing that most, if not all, married women have either experienced a time when her marriage felt lifeless or sat with another female friend or family member who was experiencing that situation, this book is also a wonderful resource for those times. You can get your copy when you call us on 031-716-3300 or find it on our website at safamily.co.za. Now, if you've missed part of today's broadcast, don't despair because you can listen to it again on our website or as a podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you back next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.